to welcome the one and only Dr. Ross Walker to the program. Hello, Ross.
G'day, mate. Lovely to talk to you.
How are you?
I'm okay. Tad busy, but I'm okay.
Well, we'll get stuck into it. I've got a quick question for you. Could you please ask the good doctor, I've had two Pfizer shots and about 4 weeks ago contracted COVID-19.
Yep.
Is there still ongoing research into a person's protection from COVID after recovering? I know medical experts are saying, go get a third jab even after recovering. The information early on was that after having COVID, you would have extra antigens in your body. Or is that only short term? That's from Aaron.
No, that's a really good question, Aaron. And can I say that a study came out just the other day suggesting that people who've had double vaccination or even a booster and then get COVID have what they're calling now super immunity, where your antibodies levels are through the roof. Should you have a booster at the moment? Yes. When should you have it? I'd wait a good month or so after you've recovered from COVID. Is it vitally necessary? Who knows? I've got to say, I've just seen a man who had a double vaccination with Pfizer develop pericarditis after the second vaccination. I think that's weakened his immunity. And then he developed severe COVID over the Christmas break. And this was about 2 or 3 months after his pericarditis from the Pfizer. And he got very, very sick with COVID. He's now recovering, but he's still having a bit of ongoing pericardial pain, which I think the vaccinations reduced his immunity from the COVID. So I still think it's better, it's safer to have, say, another vaccination if he's had the two doses. And really, at the moment, all the government's offering is Moderna or Pfizer. And as I said to you last week, I had Moderna over the Christmas break and a bit of a sore arm for a day and fine. And one of my grandchildren developed COVID. I wasn't that particularly exposed to her, but it didn't affect me at all. Stayed antigen negative, etc.
Are masks, this is from Steve, are masks most people wearing, are they protecting the wearers? I have this all the time. People will send in an email and say, masks don't protect you.
Oh, no, that's not true. The evidence is showing, especially the N95 masks or the P2 masks, which are a bit better for this, do give you reasonable protection. And the point about this, nobody's 100% protected, whether we're talking about vaccinations or whether we're talking about prior infections. And no one's 100% protected from vaccination or with masks or with social distancing. There will always be people that will pick up COVID from someone else in what seems like unusual circumstances. So, and as I say all the time, the people who are at most risk for getting COVID, very old, very sick, very fat. But this fellow I saw was 52, pretty fit fellow at 52, and he still gets very, very sick from COVID. But I think the reason he got very sick is because he'd had this pericarditis reaction to the Pfizer vaccine, which weakened his immunity in his case.
Right.
Then there are buckets of people, and most of my family, the younger ones, have been vaccinated with Pfizer, and they've had no problems with it, and they've had no COVID. So the usual thing is, the more vaccinated you are, the more protection you have, but there is nothing that's 100%. So when those loopers write into you, Brent, saying, oh, I've heard someone's vaccinated, they still got sick from COVID or died from COVID, there's always the exception to the rule. But as I say all the time, the greatest advance of the last century, in my view, is vaccination. But even though vaccination is very safe, there is still a potential, weak potential for side effects, and in some cases it doesn't work that well.
Bev says, is it true that the current rapid antigen test cannot detect the latest Omicron variant?
No. It is true that it may be not as good, and some people are saying you're better to have a saliva rapid antigen test than the one you shove up your nose. And again, it's so variable, so variable. When my granddaughter got COVID, she had a very strongly positive rapid antigen test from her nose swab. So it may pick it up in most people, but as with everything, there is no test in medicine that's 100% sensitive or 100% specific. That's just how the world works.
Kevin, I'm not too sure whether Kevin's making a statement here or whether he's actually asking a question. He says in his email, you can get the AstraZeneca as a booster. Maybe he's asking if you can get the AstraZeneca as a booster. I'm not too sure.
Look, I interviewed Greg Hunt on my show a few months ago, and he just said we're only offering Pfizer and Moderna as boosters. But if there's AstraZeneca, are around and you want to get as a booster and someone's prepared to give it to you, by all means get it. I just thought it was difficult to get AstraZeneca now, which I completely object to because I think it's the best of all the vaccines.
Do you think we'll end up seeing, and we're just, you know, crystal balling here, your opinion from the people you talk to, do you think with the arrival of the Novavax vaccine on our shores overnight, it's going through tests at a targi. Once yep. we're able to actually get hold of it, at the moment it's a question mark, is it fit for people under 18 years of age and is it right for boosters? We don't know any of this information yet,
no.
do we?
We don't know, and at the moment they're just saying you've only got the choice of the RNA vaccines for boosters. But I think there's something like 50 million doses arriving soon. So if there's 50 million doses, of course they'll be there as boosters, and of course they'll be. I can't see why it wouldn't be safe in people under the age of 18. It looks like a very safe vaccine with very good data around it.
It does. Okay. Now, speaking of vaccines, Moderna versus Pfizer. The Moderna vaccine may reduce infection risk more than Pfizer, is that right?
Yeah, this is a small study of 89 million people in the US.
that was a big sample size.
Yeah, that's right. The main two vaccines they used were Moderna and Pfizer with a bit of J&J, which is the adenovirus-based vaccine. But Moderna and Pfizer, of course, RNA-based vaccines. These 89 million people showed that if you had Pfizer, there was about a 2.8 cases breakthrough cases of COVID per 1,000 people who are vaccinated, whereas with Moderna 1.6 breakthrough cases per 1,000 people. Hospitalization rates within 60 days after you developed a breakthrough infection, 12.7% with Moderna, 13.3% with Pfizer. So not a huge difference and no difference in the death rates. Both highly effective. Moderna probably slightly superior to Pfizer. And the point we need to make here is that the studies have shown that have come out in the last month or two that the RNA vaccines are the best vaccines against Omicron, better than AstraZeneca or Novavax. That's what they're suggesting. And also, no one's really measuring the T-cell response, which is the memory response. So, again, if I measured your and my measles antibodies, they'd be almost non-existent in our blood. But the second we're exposed to a child that had measles, within a day or two, the antibody levels would be through the roof. That's the T-cell response. That's the memory response. And we don't know what any of these vaccines are doing to our T-cell response 6, 12, 18 months down the track because the vaccine hasn't been out long enough yet to know.
Brain fog. Growing evidence suggests that neurological symptoms of long COVID, such as brain fog, are caused by an immune reaction and should be reversible. Do we know enough about it yet, though?
No, we don't. But what we do know from all the studies that it appears that around a third of people will develop some sort of neurologic or psychiatric condition within 6 months of being diagnosed with COVID. And we're talking about the brain fog, which is difficulty concentrating, being forgetful, but also other conditions such as anxiety, depression, even a confusional state or potentially a stroke. So COVID is still a very serious illness, as the man I saw just before lunch had reminded me. And interestingly, you say, well, why do people get brain fog? Does the virus get into the brain? And the answer is no, it doesn't appear to do so. The reason we feel people are getting brain fog is the activation of the clotting system. So they get microcirculatory sludging in their cerebral circulation, and it also markedly activates the immune response. So all the immune cells go nuts, and it affects what's called the glial cells or the microglial cells in the brain, which then put all these inflammatory cytokines, these cells, into the brain and can alter the way the brain works. So that's what we feel the problem is. Now, again, it appears that in one study that the vaccination may offer some protection against brain fog, but they're looking at specific treatments and ways of modulating the immune system and also the clotting system to hopefully damp this all down.
Okay, in body of evidence today, we're talking about fatigue, and a study has claimed that feelings of fatigue predict deaths within 3 years in older adults. Describe for people listening today, as I yawn, what is fatigue?
Yeah, well, look, we all get tired. I mean, there's not one person on the planet who has... Yeah, sorry, am I boring you?
Yeah.
there's not one person on the planet who hasn't experienced tiredness at some stage. And the typical cause of tiredness is, of course, working too hard, playing too hard or not sleeping well. They're the obvious thing. But if you feel unusually tired, where it's hard to function more than you would expect for the circumstances of your situation, then you can have a degree of fatigue. Now, if you want to quantitate that, there is this wonderful thing called the Pittsburgh Fatigability Score that you can do. So if you just Google Pittsburgh Fatigability Scale or Score, and you get this lovely questionnaire which asks you 10 questions, I won't go through them all, but things like how tired physically and mentally do you feel after walking for 30 minutes or sitting down watching TV for a couple of hours or even socializing for an hour or so, or high-intensity exercise. And it goes through these 10 different questions and you rate yourself from 0 up to 5 for each of them for both physical and mental fatigue. Now, if this is the thing for this study, and this is a study of 3,000 people over the age of 60, and it just only went for just over 2.5 years, it found that if you rate more than 25, a score more than 25 on this Pittsburgh Fatigability Score, compared with those who scored less than 25, you had well over double the death rate. So fatigue isn't just something you should think, oh, you're just a tired person. Firstly, I say to all my patients, find out what's causing you fatigue. And apart from the sort of the vague diagnosis of chronic fatigue syndrome, which is said to be excessive fatigue for more than 3 months that doesn't appear to be lifting for no good reason, there are 5 categories of fatigue. I've already mentioned stress. The next one, the typical one, is sleep apnea, which you and I have, Brent, because we're males and every postmenopausal female has. Then there's depression, and we're not talking about you're upset because your friend died. That's grief. I'm talking about endogenous or chemical depression where you feel tired all the time, you lose your interest in things, and typically wake at 2 a.m. staring at the ceiling for an hour. Number 4 is what I call the pauses. So all men, all women go through a hormonal change around age 50. It doesn't have to be exactly 50. Where women go through menopause, we men go through andropause, where our hormone levels drop. That can make you tired and irritable and the cranky old man syndrome or the cranky older woman syndrome. And then finally, some medical cause for this. You're on a medication that may make you tired, iron deficient, thyroid problems. So when anyone's tired, don't just say, oh, I'm tired, I'll just put up with it. You've got to get a diagnosis and try and do something about it, because if you don't, the Pittsburgh Fatigability Scale reckons that you're in trouble.
You're goner. You're a goner in 3 years.
Yep, absolutely.
Okay, we're going to take a break, and we're talking to Dr. Ross Walker. We'll take a break and continue our discussion. We come back, we'll look at, let me get this right, the future of medicine, a skin patch for wound healing. We'll talk about that next.